Time Out on the WYSL stations is brought to you by Victor Chevrolet and Victor Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
Listening to the Cheap Suit Serenaders, the Moana March, on episode number 203 of the Time Out Radio Show. My name is Nozzle.
And mine is...
Drum roll, please.
Superstar!
Yay! And we have Tom Thomas, initials TNT. What's your middle name, Tom?
Neil.
Really? Neil? I thought that was began with a K. No? That's a different...
Neil. Yeah.
Very good. TNT. Do you have siblings? Do they get interesting middle or initials too?
One brother, one sister, all three of us TNT.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Very good.
Hey, your parents thought ahead.
Well, I keep asking them why they did it, and I get a different answer every time.
Yeah. Well, that's a long time ago, probably. They don't remember. They don't remember anymore. So where are you from originally? Where'd you grow up?
In the area of Buffalo.
Okay. What area specifically?
Bailey and South Ogden.
Oh, in the city? In the city?
On the edge of the city.
Okay. No, it doesn't help me. I just some people say, "Oh, I grew up in South Buffalo or you know, Arcade or I don't know these different areas." I really don't, but maybe somebody listening that would ring a bell. I'm not sure. How was your childhood? Have you ever grown up, by the way?
I force myself to try to behave that way.
Okay, but you're still into toys. We're talking to you today about Frank Hornby, who was the man responsible for introducing Meccano toys. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And was his name on any of the toys at all? Wasn't there a Hornby line of toys?
Hornby Trains.
Trains.
The Meccano Company had several offshoots, and initially started with construction toys.
And you brought some of those in today, which are extremely interesting to me because I've never seen them, and we do have pictures of them on the Facebook page. And you said that they are, okay, are they hard to find or not? I'm not sure what you were
saying. They're all over the internet.
Okay, and they're not that valuable.
Correct.
And they were marketed towards young children who may not have developed an interest or aptitude in things mechanical quite yet. So they were never really that popular. Is that what you were telling me?
Oh, they were.
Oh, they were.
Internationally, as time went on. They started in early 1900s with just a few toys locally produced and sold, but it expanded. Frank Hornby advertised all over the place. Grew his empire in the early 1900s to about 1930 with these construction toys that he created. A competitor arose in the United States, Erector Sets,
yeah,
around
right.
1913, I believe.
And who? It was Gilbert, right?
A.C. Gilbert.
Okay. Did you know him, Superstar, personally?
Yeah, we were childhood friends. A.C. Gilbert also did chemistry sets, as I recall.
He did a variety of things, too.
Did you experiment with them at home in the kitchen? Or
I still do. And then A.C. Gilbert, wasn't it American Flyer as far as electric trains, too, I think?
He bought American Flyer.
Got it.
What are you trying to do, hijack this show? We're talking about Frank Hornby today.
Sorry.
No, just kidding. We're talking Frank Hornby, and he was a creator of desire, in quotation marks, with an exclamation point at the end. And you just mentioned, Tom, marketing and advertising. Before we go into our first little break, do you want to maybe give us some of your thoughts? If you brought copious notes with you or, you know, maybe just, you know, rely on your memory. What were some of the things that he did to create desire for the products, you know? Before you even knew you wanted them, he was telling you you wanted them. That's how advertising and marketing works, right?
That's right. Initially, he advertised heavily in local papers. It expanded to national stuff with his construction toys up through the 20s.
This guy was in England, right?
He was, Liverpool.
Okay. So did the advertising cross the pond at all, or did that come later?
Eventually, but not right away. Once he pretty firmly established, it spread. And it became a competitor to Gilbert and the Erector set.
Well, there we are. Now you're hijacking the show again. We don't want to be talking about that.
I hate when the guests do that.
I'm just teasing you. Yeah.
That led Hornby to build a factory in New Jersey.
Okay.
To make Meccano products. It only lasted about 3 years. Became too expensive. He stopped. He did begin to do things like catalogs. The Meccano magazine started in, I think, 1916. A monthly publication kind of on a par with Popular Science. It didn't just deal with Meccano toys. It also talked about scientific progress at the time.
So, Mr. Brainiac over there, I'm looking at Superstar. So maybe you have some knowledge on this. So in the 19-teens, when this man, Frank Hornby, was coming up with catalogs describing the toys that you could order or buy at the local stores, was the advertising canvas kind of blank as far as, you know, a lot of people had really defined what successful advertising was? Was this
He advertised in things like women's magazines. So the mothers would buy the toys for their boys, primarily.
Okay. Makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you have any Meccano toys when you were a kid? How did you get hooked on this?
Actually, it was somewhat before my time. Meccano was really big with its construction toys. They started an offshoot with their railroad products that were an offshoot of the construction, making railroad accessories like little people, carts.
Watch the banging of the table there.
And they started a small list of toys, cars, small trucks, railway transport, little carts to move things around. They started with five. It expanded over time. It got accepted quickly. The public was buying them. Hornby set up a series of shops that sold only Meccano toys. Kept him exclusive.
Now, were these
in a way.
Cast iron? Were they die cast or were they pressed steel like you showed me a minute ago? You know, with the screw-on wheels and things like that.
No, they were primarily die cast.
Okay.
Initially, they had metal wheels for a while. They went back to metal wheels when rubber was hard to get hold of over the years. But they continued producing these small little rubber tires that could put on and off of a vehicle or switch it to another one, make it an extra play in that relationship. Yeah.
All right. So Frank Hornby, was he a pioneer in any sense of the word as far as the advertising and marketing? You know, are there things that maybe he spearheaded or invented, if you will, and that we're still using today? Can we, you know, credit him with any of the things that we use in advertising today?
Certainly. A pioneer in distributing and marketing his toys. Advertising, the Meccano magazine, he started Meccano clubs. He would start competitions for things like, show us a photo of your layout. If you show the best layout, we get some kind of prize. I don't know what they were.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe free tires.
Free oil changes on all your die-cast vehicles.
Right. He also expanded into France. He set up his son with a factory near Paris to begin producing French Dinky toys.
So the models that they were producing were based more on the French vehicles, like Citroën, Renault?
In the French factory, yes. But some of the French toys and English toys were sent to the other country on a regular basis.
Do a little cross-pollination. Yeah, love it.
And when someone would run out of parts or they would need a base plate for a car, they'd call Frank.
Yeah. Yeah, the area that I really love, I like that Mercedes 319 auto whatever that is, Vista Cruiser or something. But then there's the rare French. That model was always made in France by Dinky, but there's this one here, the Swiss Post Office variation. I think there were three known to exist last time I checked. That fascinates me. And then Superstar has the four-door Corvair hardtop in that like a pea green color, which was for the South African market. I love that stuff. I would love to, get my grubby little maulers on some of those rare items like that.
Oddly enough, I met a guy from South Africa who collects Dinkies, and we've traded back and forth. Dinky parts were sent to somewhere in South Africa, painted and assembled in South Africa. Most of the actual pieces came from England. They were just put together there, their choice of colors and so on.
Interesting. So that's why they have the different colors for for that market. That's cool. Why don't we break away and do a tidbit? And today we're going to honor our mothers, since tomorrow is Mother's Day. Well, if you hear it on Sunday, it'll be today. And this is Mike and Eileen talking it up again on the Time Out Tidbit.
Here's the latest Time Out Tidbit.
Eileen, how do you remember your mom?
My mom was a very special person. She spent a lot of her early childhood years on a grandmother's farm in Auburn, so she didn't have too many playmates, but yet she found many ways to be innovative and creative and never really lacked for any kind of adventure.
Really?
Really. She had to leave high school at an early age to help support the family. She was on her own. She was about 21 and had her own apartment, and because of her parents' health situation, she had to take my uncle and her brother in, and she fed him, clothed, and paid for his high school education. And then later, after he came back from seminary in Toronto, he lived with my then-married mom and dad with two little babies in a cute little two-room bungalow with a gallery kitchen on Belford Drive in Greece. And my uncle kept saying in his later years that he couldn't wait to get to heaven to thank Mom for everything she did for him. Now, Mom was Irish. She had the Irish temper, but she never really said anything worse than Judas Priest when she was angry, although, as Dad said, she could shoot daggers with her eyes. She had a very gentle manner, soft, soothing voice. And I remember her singing to herself in the kitchen whenever she was cleaning up or baking cookies, whatever. She never sang professionally, but to me her voice is very beautiful, very soothing, and it always touched my soul. Now, Mom could stretch a dollar or a penny, 50 ways from next Thursday. But she had to, because she had to feed six kids on a very tight budget. And she sold a lot of our clothes. I remember one Christmas Santa gave us bathrobes. And mine was all patchwork, many different box of colored cloth. And I loved it. Wore it for years. And she also made me doll clothes for my Barbie dolls. And to think of all those narrow little seams she had to sew. I've sold them years later. I'm still kicking myself for not saving them.
My mom was great at decorating, especially at Christmas. She'd paint the mirrors. And like murals on the mirrors with the water-based paint, where they'd remove it after holidays. And she was very gifted like that. As far as she would sing to me, mostly hymns, but that's the only time you'd ever hear her sing. And ironically, it's one of those hymns we actually sang at her funeral, just in her honor.
In her honor, sure,
yeah,
why not?
Yeah. How about cooking?
Oh, Mom was a gifted, very gifted cook and baker. She made all of our treats, cookies, whatever. And often when we were walking home from school, well, maybe half a mile or so to go, we could always tell what we were having for dinner, stew. We could smell it that far away because she had a very powerful kitchen fan. Now, my uncle, who was just starting the construction business, built that home for her. It was the first home he built. He gave her little extras like the powerful fan. And whenever she made popcorn for us, all the kids in the neighborhood would come running over and we'd feast together in the backyard because they could smell it in the van. She was a voracious reader, loved to read, and she would sit down in the evening in her easy chair with a good book and maybe an apple or two to go with it and had a grand time.
That sounds like an amazing mom. My mother could cook for 1,000 people with ease. And she was known for her cooking. She'd have, you know, especially pasta dinners. And her meatballs were excellent. Fried chicken, not as much. Cakes, not as much.
But Italian cooking was her forte. She
that
was Italian.
Was definitely her forte, which is an Italian word, isn't it? Forte. Okay. I thought it was forte, meant 40.
Oh, I think no, forte means skilled.
All right, but we're getting off track here.
Sorry. Though my mom left school at an early age, she was a very intelligent, very classy, very dignified lady, and she could do any kind of math problem in her head. And math puzzles my mind. And every ambulatory skills got that. She couldn't go out too much. So I'd do a grocery shopping for her, and she'd give me a list, and she would give me what the bill should come to. And every darn time, she was down to the penny.
She's amazing. My mom would be fascinated with the fact that I would be able to factor polynomials in ninth grade.
What the heck is a polynomial?
That's a story for another day, but I was able to do it. I would do it on my little chalkboard, and she'd sort of scratch her head wondering why I wasn't.
She got
acting
a powerful mind.
She wants to know why I wasn't acting like other children.
Well, you're being yourself.
Yes,
ma'am. Mom, well, she was very proud of her Chinese stick men she could draw. Yeah.
Pictures of matchstick men her, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And she was a subtle disciplinarian. You know, and once in a while, my sister and I get into an argument and have a fight, and she would make us sit on a kitchen chair facing each other. We have to sit there looking at each other for 5 minutes. Try that.
That should be fun.
Try that. It works. One of us eventually would start to blink or smile or laugh, and it would be over. We'd be friends again.
My brothers and sisters always hated me because I was an only child.
I can understand why, yeah.
Eileen, what song reminds you most of your mom?
There is one that it's called Mamba, sung by the group called Il Divo. And some of the words are, I hope you're happy with my life, proud of all the things I've done along the way.
With that said, the song that would be perfect for my mom would be Mama Tried by Merle Haggard. Anyway, thank you for your wonderful recollections.
Well, thank you, sweetie. Thank you.
Beautiful. Can you pass the box of Kleenex? I'm all choked up over here. Great job, guys. All right, we're going to bump out, sell a little product, come back and talk to Tom Thomas, TNT from Grand Island, drove all the way here this morning. His only request last night on text was, can you have a cup of coffee ready for me?
And we delivered, didn't we, Tom?
We sure did.
All right, we'll see you on the other side.
Springtime savings and selection have never been better at Victor Chevrolet. Check out these great lease specials. You've got the waterfront covered in your new 24 Chevy Silverado LT Crew Cab. Just $349 a month for 36 months. The 24 Chevy Equinox LT All-Wheel Drive. Only $269 a month for 27 months. Or a 24 Chevy Trailblazer LT. Just $229 a month for 36 months. And the new Chevy Trax LS $169 a month for 24 months. Mileage allowance on all deals, $10,000 per year. First payment in DMV at closing, $2,500 cash or trade equity, and Tier 1 credit approval required. Must have lease and household. Get more details at dealer. And don't forget, Victor Chevrolet also has an unbeatable pre-owned selection. Whatever brand of vehicle you're driving, you can trust it to our Chevy Certified Service Department. Come see how easy it is to do business with us. Together, let's drive. Victor Chevrolet, Route 96 in Victor. Visit VictorChevrolet.com.
From Avon Feed and Supply, Dry Shod waterproof footwear. There's a big selection of Dry Shod for men and women. Its exclusive insulation breathes and keeps you warm without bulk, and you'll stay dry top to bottom with state-of-the-art waterproofing. While you're at Avon Feed, find everything for your pet, from feeding bowls to toys, leads, collars, beds, food, and treats. The Avon Feed and Supply Frequent Flyer Program feeds your feathered friends in the cold weather, and for every 10 bags you buy, you get one free. Avon Feed and Supply has what the big
big pet chain stores will never have. Tim Cole and his great, knowledgeable staff. And if you think you'll save money at that pet superstore, well, think again. While you're at Avon Feed, don't forget the two-legged pets with River Rat Thousand Island Cheese, Once Again Nut Butters, East Hill Creamery Products, Nunday Mustards, and Rickles Pickles. Open weekdays 9 to 6, Saturday 9 to 4. Avon Feed and Supply, West Main Street, at the bottom of the hill, just west of the Circle.
In 1926, the Avon Fire Department put an Aaron's Fox pumper into service. It now sits fully restored in a museum near Toronto. Avon has an opportunity to bring the Fox home for its 100th birthday for a fraction of its appraised value. The Aaron's Fox Full Circle Preservation Society needs your help. Look us up on Facebook or call 615-6463. Let's bring home the Fox.
All Seasons Wine and Spirits, your local and locally owned store, supporting your neighbors and our community. Always save at All Seasons on cases of your favorites. No sales events necessary. All Seasons Wines and Spirits, voted best in Livingston County, 255 Main Street in Avon.
Time Out Radio Show on the WYSL stations.
Do you hear that whistle down the line? I figure that it's engine number 49. She's the only one that'll sound that way on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
So that's Jack Teagarden. Now, what was he? He was a band leader and a horn player, correct?
I believe so. I'm not really up on Teagarden.
Did you listen to him when you were a whippersnapper?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I was in early middle age when I used to listen to his records.
This is a classic. You couldn't avoid this one in my house for some reason. I can't give you any details on that, but we heard this all the time for some reason.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Maybe there was a record. I don't know. Maybe my dad sang it while he was painting the house. I don't remember. Too long ago. All right, we're talking to Tom and Thomas, TNT, from Grand Island, New York, and we're talking Frank Hornby, who was the creator of Hornby trains and Dinky toys, which were very popular in England, certain parts of Europe like France, mm-hmm. and Canada, too, I'm assuming, since they were kind of yes. connected to England. We have a Canadian friend that lives in Orchard Park, and she... You know, she knows all about Dinky toys, whereas you mentioned Dinkies down here, and you know they're not as well known. Corgi, for some reason, did a better job of marketing here, I think. But anyway, that's a different story for a different day. So we were talking. One of the things that Frank Hornby did to create desire, if you will, and there were clubs young people could join. There were competitions, and you were mentioning what types of competitions did they have, Tom?
What you could build with your Erector set, the biggest, the heaviest layout competitions, pictures of how you arrange your toys and all the accessories that go with them, which helps sell all the accessories.
Were these things that father and son and maybe even daughter and mom got involved with making? Or because a lot of these toys, they require some mechanical aptitude and some tools. Did the kits come with tools?
There were two tools needed, a spanner and a screwdriver. A spanner is a wrench. They had a pretty standardized set of bolts to hold everything together. But the two tools were about all you needed in your imagination.
These were probably very popular at Christmas time.
Very.
Okay.
Primarily aimed at young boys.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, I bought a... Here's a tidbit you might not know about me. I bought a French dinky on Dick Road. Tom asked me earlier, how much...
What's so, so funny?
So Tom asked me earlier, how much did you pay for it?
It's a double.
Love that. You know, it sounds mildly suspicious, right? But actually, it was Dinky number 533, the Mercedes-Benz 300 SE Coupe, and it set me back $20 in 2010. So how many years ago was that? 14 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of chipped up, so I probably overpaid for it a little bit, but I didn't have the model. And it was an original one from France. I said, what the heck? It's something I collect. It's the kind of car I like. Why not? Took a plunge, and it's displayed proudly in my, I call the closeum, my toy room back at the shack. So before the break, we were talking about French dinkies, but let me ask you this. Were they made to the exact same scale and specs? Who were designing these? Were the Englishmen designing the French cars for the French market, or were French designers?
They were separate. The French designed French cars. English designed British vehicles. Oddly enough, a friend of mine happened to be at a factory in Liverpool where they were starting to close down in the late 70s, or was it late 60s? Anyway, around that time, he happened to be there. The factory was not busy. They actually produced their last toy. There was a worker strike going on to stay in business. This friend of mine brought home, and now lives in Fort Erie, Ontario, a series of original blueprints to verify that they were designed by the English for the English market.
Mm, that's cool. So the security was kind of lax that day, huh?
There wasn't much at that time. They were about to close.
But, you know, you say that they're two separate entities. Mm-hmm. And even so, you know, you hold a French dinky in your hand. Have you ever done that, Superstar? No, I'm just kidding.
No. Never run across one of those, that nationality.
You hold an English and a French dinky in either hand, and they're remarkably similar. The base plates are kind of stamped the same ways. Mm-hmm. The wheels and the hubs are created similarly. They both have rubber tires, glazing, in other words, windows, mm-hmm. a detailed interior, and sometimes moving features. But dinkies were kind of basic. They didn't have opening doors and trunks and hoods as much as other manufacturers like Corgi, yes or no?
True. Corgi was much more into, what would you call them, accessories, mm-hmm. Making them operable. The dinky stayed relatively plain.
Is that part of the reason why they went toe up before Corgi did? Maybe they didn't keep up with the times?
Correct. They tried. They also had a restriction in dealerships, which prevented their sale to most any just store in U.S. or England. You had to be an exclusive dinky dealer to sell those Meccano products. Over time, this is part of their downfall.
And to be a dealer and to maintain that dealership or franchise, whatever you call it, you probably had to buy a certain amount of inventory. You don't know. And you probably had to, you know, push it, sell it.
I've seen order sheets that the individual dealer could order as much as they wanted of a particular model, and a whole list of went to Dinky in England, and it was sent over to fill your order.
All right, so talk about the accessories. I'm thinking of the little road signs. Were there people and buildings also?
Actually, some people were some of the first toys made as Dinky to go with the railroad, the Hornby Railroad equipment. That's how they began. Accessories, signs, street signs, big boxes. You could buy 12 together. You could buy a stand-up signal, four-way signal, three-way, two-way.
How about houses, buildings?
Well,
not so much.
They did toward the end, maybe in the 50s also, they tried to make this dinky product, dinky builder, where you could get all these parts and assemble a small building. Very simply done. Sort of rod through different openings to hold the different parts together and build a small building.
Yeah. I think we've talked about, you know, you're getting interested in dinkies, but what I will say about them from what I know, you know, much of it is through talking to you, because you're one of the last exclusive dinky dealers that you see at toy shows. You see people that may have a mixture, Corgi, Matchbox, dinky, whatever other brands are out there, maybe some German brands. But you're one of the last people I can think of that you go to your table and it's pretty much exclusively dinky. And for me, they have a really particular charm. They're particularly charming because of their simplicity. And they're getting to be an age where is it fair to say there's very few mint examples left? So there's some usage and patina on all of these things. And you'd look at them and say, look at this, you know, fantastic, darling little toy that somehow is, you know, avoided being put in the trash in the landfill all these years ago. And they're super charming.
Well, there's a market for purchasing beat up dinky toys to refinish them, keep them for yourself, try to sell them. There's also a market for mint boxed toys. They're individuals, not only U.S. and Canada, but England. They have shelf after shelf of mint boxed Foden trucks, for example.
Love Foden
trucks.
Or dinky
aircraft. They're around. They're getting harder to find until you hit an auction somewhere where a collector passes away or decides he's done and will auction off his collection. A lot of the top prices go to the nicer, close to mint or mint, especially pre-war French dinkies. Recent auction, there are little automobiles would sell for $400 to about $1,200 for one.
Now, pre-war French, I don't know. I might be spacing out here a little bit, which is not that uncommon. But were there any problems with metal fatigue on the dinkies?
That was just a few years as Britain entered the war. The best metal was getting harder and harder to get.
Okay.
So they used whatever they could find and purchase to use in their die-cast machines to create a toy.
So you could have one of these unfortunate toys that were using the inferior metal and have kept it in a, you know, hermetically sealed box in perfect conditions for the last 75 years, and it would still be disintegrating, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. That's sad.
Is that pot metal that they made some of that stuff out of?
It was called Mazak. Sure what's in it, but it's like a pot metal.
Yeah. So soft, low-temperature metal.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay. What else do you want to tell us about French dinkies? You brought in a list here. It looks like there's four columns of maybe, looks like there's maybe 100 models here. Everything from a Guy, that's a truck brand. Mm-hmm. There was a Guy Warrior, Guy Snowplow, Euclid, Quarry Truck, mm-hmm. Austin, Jaguar, Mercedes.
That list is dinky toys sold in France?
This is English dinky toys imported to France. Oops.
Okay.
There you go. So what does that mean? So they created them in England, mm-hmm. and then when they sold them in France, did they say made in France on the bottom, or did they say
no.
made in England? Oh, okay.
Everything was stamped a country of origin.
Okay.
Some dinkies were made in Spain. Some were made in Hong Kong. There's one race car made in Holland. I don't know how it got into the dinky line, but it did happen.
Wow.
Several countries. As time went on, dinky folded. They sold many of their dies to a firm in India that made about 30 imitations of dinkies. The metal quality was not good. The paint quality was not good. A firm called Kumar in India dealt with them for, I don't know, 8 or 10 years.
Are you prepared to talk about the Atlas dinky recreations at all? Because I'm wondering, you know, they did such a nice job probably in the early 2000s, I'm going to say. In fact, some of the models we've got, you've got the Chrysler and the Corvair. I mean, they're possibly better than the originals. I mean, they did a super fine job. And I got to say, they're made in China. But do you know anything about the dyes they used, or were they recreated, or were they the same dyes? Or
no, the dyes did not last forever.
Okay,
they took an original, somehow cast a dye from it. Used improved metal techniques, improved paint qualities, and created very clean-looking, smooth, just an improved, visible product. Starting mid-90s, I believe, and they're still going.
Oh, they are?
They started reproducing French dinkies. As they expanded, there must be a couple hundred dinky-Atlas toys available on the internet. Recent, just by scanning the internet, I'll bet a quarter to a third of Dinkies advertised out of over 50,000 advertised as Dinky under Toys and Hobbies. I'll bet 25 to 35% of them are now Atlas Dinkies for sale. Mm-hmm. Oh, much cheaper, too.
Interesting. My feeling is, yeah, even though they're made in China and they're reproductions, I don't think they're going to be made forever. And 15 years from now, I think those are going to be valuable, too, just because they did such a fantastic job on them. That's just my personal feeling.
Fortunately or unfortunately, the models they make are old cars, probably 50s, 60s. Kids today don't know those cars like older people did, who actually probably drove them or wanted one or something.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to last indefinitely.
Interesting. Okay, so we're how much time do we have there, buddy?
Six and a half.
Can we talk about how toy shows have changed? My list of questions include, how far have you traveled to buy and sell diecast models? Did you ever go to the Chicago show or maybe even overseas? Or did you use an overseas trip as an excuse to go on toy buying excursions?
Actually, it was the reverse. I went to mid-70s, I believe. I went to study British primary schools in England. As part of that, I had 2 weeks left of time and went through France a bit, Spain. Purchased some Dinkies at a Parisian flea market, a few of them.
To talk about that, what was that like? Outdoors? Yeah.
Yes. It was really for fleas, for a random variety of everything. Occasionally you'd run across somebody with Dinky toys. I did buy those.
So you were already focused on Dinky toys?
Not really.
Okay.
This was before I got serious and actually started buying them. To really save them and begin to resell at a later date some of them. Some I'll probably die with.
So did you? How many did you find? How did you get them back? Did you put them in your luggage? Or
wrapped them in socks and put them in my luggage, yes.
Nice. Good prices, as you recall? I'm just curious.
I have to translate.
You'd have to do the conversion. Oh, that's cool. So France would be the farthest you've gone and purchased toy cars.
I actually gone to purchase. I recently received some toys, Dinky toys from the 30s from Argentina. Bought them on the internet.
Nice.
The quickest shipping I've had.
Nice.
3 days they were here from Argentina.
What did you buy? Dinkies?
Yes. They were a set of animals made by Hornby, 30s. Rare here.
Super.
It's not even in the Dinky books.
Love it. Very good.
But you're talking about toy shows?
And how they've changed.
Yes. Over the years, I've been going to different toy shows, probably 25 years. We had local shows in Buffalo, at least one, sometimes two or three a year. I've been to Canada, near the Toronto area. There used to be probably 8 or 10 shows a year in the Toronto-Hamilton-Burlington area. Those are largely gone. They used to be set up in churches, fire departments. Not anymore. There's two main Canadian shows still in existence, partly through a Canadian toy club that sponsors them. Good Toys, that's where I saw the 9-foot Eiffel Tower Meccano product.
I'm sorry, you said 9 foot?
9 feet tall. Some guy, he breaks it in, or doesn't break it. He disconnects it halfway up so he can transport it, brings it to the show, puts it back together in a room that has a 10-foot ceiling.
That's a lot of Meccano stuff.
Heavy.
I would think.
I used to go to toy shows in Macungie, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Still do, but probably won't anymore. 20 years ago, there would be an outdoor show. Mm-hmm. People would come at 4 a.m. with flashlights to go through the tents set up outdoors to buy toys. There were two shows set up at the local school. There was a show in the local fire hall. Two hotels had shows going. That's 5 shows in one day. Now they're down to half a day in an open field that is usually a farmer's market on other days of the week. 12 dealers. That's what happened to that whole thing. It was in conjunction with a super antique car show.
Yes.
Where they have hundreds of antique cars.
Schlockfest or something like that, maybe? I forget what that. Maybe I'm thinking of something else. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it does have another name.
Been there. That's the show Larry and I used to drive the SLK to.
Our very own roadster lurking nearby.
Okay, over time, just toy shows have decreased. Now you're more likely to see something called a collectible show, where they have toys as part of it, but they'll do old LP records, character figures, maybe stamps, just a whole variety of anything you can collect at these shows. Train shows have somewhat survived. There are more train shows currently in Western New York than any toy shows. Some of them also include toys. I sold at a few. I went to try and find some toys at them.
I think train shows are good places to find, you know, die-cast vehicles, whether they're Corgi, Dinky, Matchbox, Impy. You know, I've got a couple stories I could tell you. I won't, you know, take away from your time here, but
that's fine. Very, very.
Because people are putting those things on their layouts, and typically they're in the box that's under the table. You got to really scrounge, but sometimes you find a four-leaf clover. You know,
very hit and miss. I'll say one out of two train shows I've been to locally, I'll find actual Dinkies that are nice enough, inexpensive enough to purchase and hang on to.
Excellent. You got any interesting or unusual stories that you can relate to us? Like, did you, I'll come up with a scenario. You buy a box, you know, a lot, an L-O-T, not a lot, but a lot of toys, a group of toys, for a fixed price, and you're rummaging through them and say, geez, I made my, you know, it was all worth it just because of this one model or something like that. Do you have any great find stories?
There's probably several. That makes my day. Scanning through the internet to find a bunch of toys for sale, I look through to see if they're anything interesting or unusual, and probably once a year I'll find something either very valuable or very unusual, and purchase it, bring it home, and try to sell the rest, the other 8 or 10 or 20 pieces, and keep that one.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, so Tom Thomas, thank you again for taking the time and effort to come over here from Grand Island this morning. It was very enlightening. We always like your visual aids. So check the Facebook page, folks, when it's up there. And you can see what we were talking about today. We're going to go and take a break, come back, and do the compare-o-scope. Don't touch that dial.
It's the WISL stations, 92.1 FM, 95.5 FM West, 27,000 watt, AM 1040.
Savings and selection are popping up everywhere at Victor Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, 6484 Route 96 in Victor. Try these deals. A 24 Ram 2500 Tradesman Crew Cab 4x4 pickup is 10% off. A 24 Jeep Compass in bright white clear coat, only $199 a month for 27 months with $46.97 down. Step lease loyalty. A 24 Dodge Hornet SUV in gray cray is $229 a month for 24 months. $59.44 down, must be competitive brand owner or lessee. The 24 Jeep Wrangler 4XE convertible is just $369 a month for 36 months with $69.66 down. All lease deals require first payment, DMV, taxes, and fees due at signing. Other conditions may apply. See dealer for details. We welcome Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram customers in Victor, Canandaigua, Macedon, Fairport, and Finger Lakes. The selection's great, and they're ready with your deal at the most beautiful new vehicle sales and service dealership in the area. Victor Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, 6484 Route 96, just east of Victor.
Debunking advertising from the law office of Christopher Johnson. One ad some injury attorneys inundate you with, "What's your case worth? Call us and find out." You know, nobody can tell you, quote, what your case is worth over the phone. Nobody knows. The ultimate answer to, quote, what your case is worth involves weeks or months of research, evaluation, and preparation. Many factors go into any compensation you might get, like applicable law, who's actually at fault, how much insurance coverage there is, and many, many other factors. At the Law Office of Christopher Johnson, the singular focus is getting your life back on track after an accident or injury. That takes money, and it helps when the advice and legal advice you get has a one-on-one focus informed by straight talk. Christopher Johnson Attorney, car, truck, motorcycle accidents, personal injury, and DWI defense. Call 585-415-3803. 585-415-3803.
Tom Walls team member, Emily.
We don't want you to stop in for a Tom Walls Haddock dinner. We want you to stop in every week for a Haddock dinner and bring your family. We like hearing your family laughing and enjoying themselves. They bring joy to our restaurant. Crispy golden haddock, hot crispy fries, and just made coleslaw. That's what we bring to the table. Now you make it a family tradition. Tom Walls. Good, good.
Share the good times. Tom Walls.
Hey, if you like history and you like airplanes, the National Warplane Museum in Geneseo, New York is the place to go. Tours, exhibits, events, vintage aircraft, and more. Visit nationalwarplanemuseum.com for more details.
All Seasons Wine and Spirits. Why go to the big liquor superstores in Rochester when you can save and park right next to the front door at All Seasons? They'll carry your discount case purchases to your car with a smile. Voted best in Livingston County. All Seasons Wine and Spirits, 255 Main Street in Avon.
Time Out Radio Show on the WYSL stations.
Listening to Autobahn. And Tom, you wanted to say one more thing. The Dinky Meccano company is still alive and well under what name?
Called Spin Master in Canada, Toronto Stock Exchange.
So they're producing die-cast cars? You don't know.
Okay. I don't know what they're doing. They just own rights to use that name.
Very fine. And we are at what point in the show there, Superstar?
I think it's time to hit this button right here.
It's another WYSL timeout. Compare-o-scope.
And that's a side-by-side comparison of an original or early song recording and a popular cover of the same song. Today we're featuring Sonny. It's a soul jazz standard written by Bobby Hebb in 1963. It's one of the most performed and recorded popular songs, with hundreds of versions released and its chord progression influencing later songs. BMI, Body Mass Index? No. What's BMI, Superstar?
Broadcast Music Incorporated.
Rates Sonny number 25 in its top 100 songs of the century. Okay, Robert Alvin Von Hebb lived from 1938 to 2010, was an American R&B soul singer, musician, songwriter, recording artist, and performer, known for this hit that we're going to listen to today. This is the 1966 version of Sonny.
Sonny, yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sonny, you smiled at me and really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you. Sunny, thank you for the sunshine bouquet. Sunny, thank you for the love you brought my way. You gave to me your all in all, and now I feel 10 feet tall. Sunny, one so true, I love you. sunny. Thank you for the truth you let me see.
Bobby Hebb, 1966, Sonny. He wrote the song after his older brother Harold was stabbed outside a Nashville nightclub. Hebb was devastated by the event, and many critics say it inspired the lyrics and tune. But according to Hebb, he merely wrote the song as an expression of a preference for a sunny disposition over a lousy disposition following the murder of his brother. Oh, well. So, Tom, our guest, has already said he prefers version 2, but he hasn't heard it yet. He's got to make his trip back to Grand Island, so he's got a dry sense of humor. I kind of like it. Boney M. did a cover of this in 1976, and they were a European disco group. They recorded it for their debut album, Take the Heat Off Me. It was produced by Frank Farian and arranged by Stefan Klinkhammer in a Euro disco arrangement. Let's listen to it. Up to heaven there. My up here. Okay, yeah, that's Boney M. from 1976. So we turn to Tom Thomas, TNT, and we ask you, sir, which version of those did you prefer or not, and give us some insight as to why.
Well, I'll have to withdraw my vote for number 2.
Okay.
I vote for number 1.
Number 1.
Definitely the more classic.
Yeah, do you remember that song?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, it says here there's hundreds of covers. We could probably do another comparoscope.
Everybody remembers the Bobby Hebb version, though.
Yeah, yeah, love it. I liked it. Whoops, I shouldn't say anything before Superstar has his go at it. What do you think?
Is it my turn?
It's your turn.
I'm going to be contrarian today. I'm going with Boney M.
Oh, okay.
It's got that exuberant disco kind of thing. And I did like the vocals in the Boney M version.
I know
dance.
That...
You could dance to it.
Right. That's disco.
Yeah. Just get your polyester leisure suit out, and you'll be all set in your seersucker tie.
Mirror ball here in the studio.
Beautiful. I know the name Boney M, but I did not know they had any connection with being a European disco group. I don't know. I'm out in left field sometimes. I'm going to go with Bobby Hebb, the 1966. I think it's just more true to form, I guess. I don't see it as a disco tune. You know, Bobby Hebb's version is kind of upbeat enough, really, for me. That's it.
It is pretty upbeat.
It is. Mm-hmm. So, 2 for Bobby Hebb, and then 1 outlier. 1 turncoat over there once Boney M. That's show number 203, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. And that's it and all about it.
Time Out on the WYSL stations is brought to you by Victor Chevrolet and Victor Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Oh my God.